the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider on this last weekend of October, first weekend of November. A look at the news in a minute, but first a note about my guest in the interview segment. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Geoffrey Strickland, who works here in Rome for the Forum of Catholic-Inspired NGOs. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone more enthusiastic about their work than Geoffrey, as you heard last week, and will again today. He explains how the Forum of Catholic-Inspired NGOs was born, what its activities are, and, until COVID imposed restrictions, his exciting travels to many parts of the world. And wait till you hear how many languages he speaks. Now on to the news headlines. Sunday, October 25th at the Angelus, Pope Francis announced that on November 28th, he will hold a consistory for the creation of 13 new cardinals, 9 of whom are under the age of 80 and can thus vote in a future papal conclave. The maximum number for cardinal electors was set by St. Paul VI at 120. Thus, the new electors will number 129 until November 12th when Cardinal Worrell turns 80. Then there will be 128. The United States now has its first African-American cardinal in Wilton Gregory of Washington, D.C. Rwanda got its first ever cardinal in Antoine Kambanda, Archbishop of Kigali. And interestingly enough, the apostolic vicar of Brunei, Cornelius Sim, was elevated. His relatively small diocese has only 3 priests. On Tuesday, October 27th, in a letter to the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, Pope Francis retraced the history and values of the European continent and expressed his desire for fraternity and solidarity among nations and respect for all peoples in the spirit of the continent's founding fathers amid a period marked by individualistic tendencies. The Holy See and the Church in Europe celebrate 3 anniversaries this year. The 50th of the establishment of diplomatic relations between the then European community and the Holy See, the founding 40 years ago of the Commission of the Bishops' Conferences of the European Communities, and thirdly, the 70th anniversary of the Schuman Declaration that inspired the continent's gradual process of reintegration after 2 world wars. Wednesday, October 28th, that morning in the chapel of the Santa Marta residence, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, imposed the pallium on His Beatitude Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the newly named Patriarch of Jerusalem of the Latins. The pallium signifies the power that the Metropolitan, in communion with the Roman Church, has by law in his own province. On October 24th, Pope Francis had appointed Archbishop Pizzaballa as Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, making him the 10th patriarch since the re-establishment of the Latin Patriarchate in 1847. Wednesday at the General Audience, Pope Francis continued his catechesis on prayer, inviting the faithful to persevere in prayer in every moment of their lives, even in the most difficult and in those in which we feel the burden of our sins. He said, "We never pray alone. Jesus prays with us." Francis told the faithful that prayer is the eternal expression of their dialogue of love with the Father, and he invited them to persevere in prayer at every moment of their lives. Greeting those gathered in the Paul VI Hall for the weekly general audience, before beginning his catechesis, the Pope expressed his sorrow for not being able to come close to the faithful because of COVID precautions, but he assured them he was close in spirit and invited them to stay safe. Thursday, October 29th, through a telegram sent by Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin to Bishop André Marceau of Nice, France, Pope Francis expressed his sorrow and offered prayers for the Church in France following the tragic murders of 3 people in the Basilica of Notre Dame in Nice on Thursday. Informed of the savage attack that was perpetrated this morning in a church in Nice, causing the death of several innocent people, His Holiness Pope Francis joins in prayer with the suffering of the families who were affected, and he shares their sorrow. He asks the Lord to bring them comfort, and he commends the victims to his mercy. Condemning such violent acts of terror in the strongest possible way, the Pope assures the Catholic community of France and all the French people of his closeness, and he calls for unity. Confiding France to the protection of Our Lady, he wholeheartedly gives the apostolic blessing to all those affected by this tragedy. Also Thursday, in a telegram sent to Archbishop Julian Leo Ben Kim of Kuala Lumpur, the Pope expressed his sorrow for the death of Cardinal Anthony Soter Fernandez, 88, Archbishop Emeritus of Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and the first Cardinal of Malaysia. He prayed for the Cardinal's eternal rest, expressing his gratitude for his faithful witness to the Gospel, his generous service to the Church in Malaysia, and his long-standing commitment to the promotion of ecumenism and interreligious dialogue. Also Thursday, the Vatican announced that starting Wednesday, November 4th, the weekly general audience will again be streamed live from the Papal Library in the Apostolic Palace. This because of the reported COVID case at the October 21st audience. The new measures are to ensure the safety of everyone involved in a papal audience. Friday, October 30th, Pope Francis just had a number of private audiences. Well, those are the highlights of the past week, but now stay tuned for my conversation with Geoffrey Strickland and learn more about the Forum of Catholic-inspired NGOs, non-governmental organizations. Welcome to the Q&A. This week I have a question for you. Can you list the seven sorrows of Mary? Catholics learn early on of the Church's devotion to the seven sorrows of Mary, the Mother of God. Now, what are those sorrows, and how did this devotion start? Devotion to the Sorrowful Mother began with very early Christians as they remembered her agonizing sorrow as she stood at the cross, watching the crucifixion of her divine Son. That devotion gained popularity during the Middle Ages. However, it wasn't until 1727 that a special day was included in the Church's universal liturgical calendar when Pope Benedict XIII added a universal feast known as Sorrows of Mary. Today, as a result of Vatican Council II calendar reforms, there's only one liturgical feast day commemorating the suffering and sorrow of Mary. This is an obligatory memorial that takes place on September 15th and is known as the Memorial of Our Lady of Sorrows. Okay, the seven sorrows are the prophecy of Simeon, the flight into Egypt, the loss of the child Jesus in the temple, the meeting of Jesus and Mary on the way of the cross, the crucifixion, the taking down of the body of Jesus from the cross, and the burial of Jesus.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I had called in last spring about talking to my parents and I was going to convert to the church and how to talk to them. They were not happy at all, but I was confirmed to the church at the Easter Vigil service and we really don't talk about the topic, but our relationship is still intact. So that's a good thing. Just wanted to say thank you. And I still listen every day because I always learn something new.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The devil will always do his best to tempt you into sin until you get to that place where you love sin. That's what he wants. He wants you down there with him. And not because he loves you, he hates you. When you do what the enemy tempts you to do, he does it out of pure hatred.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with a special friend of many years, Geoffrey Strickland. A native of Louisiana, Geoffrey works for the Forum of Catholic-inspired NGOs, and you'd be hard-pressed to find someone more enthusiastic about their work with the diverse and exciting groups of NGOs than Geoffrey, as you heard last week. And you'll hear again this week. He explains how the Forum of Catholic-inspired NGOs was born, what its activities are, and, until COVID imposed restrictions, his exciting travels to many parts of the world. And wait until you hear how many languages he speaks. What would you say is the main function of the Forum?
It's essentially a round table. It's horizontal in its nature. It brings the different actors together. In 2007, I believe 70 NGOs gathered. I think now we are about 130.
Wow.
So we've really increased our spread. We're getting more NGOs, of course, from Latin America and Africa, and the richness that the different languages and cultures bring. But the idea is to bring together these NGOs with the richness of their grassroots experience, the realities on the ground that they live day to day, and essentially create a roundtable with the representatives of the Holy See, the Holy See missions, to better inform and better equip them, and indeed the NGOs themselves, with advocacy enriched not only from maybe, say, one perspective, be it from the educational NGOs working together, but the education NGOs working with the NGOs that work in migration, that work in
right.
health, that work in these different fields. Because what we are seeing, especially, for example, now with the COVID crisis, is that approaching issues that we face today from a unilateral, let's say a one-dimensional perspective, you just can't do it. We have to work together, and thus we have to bring our multidisciplinary talents together.
Well, I like the way you said, too, that it's horizontal instead of vertical. Not so much a power grab or somebody's at the top, but a sharing on a very equal ground, you know. Well, I went on your website. As we're sitting here, I actually have it on my laptop, on my computer screen. Probably read the whole site in the last couple of days. I was going to ask you about the importance of a Catholic-inspired NGO. What I'm about to say is from your website, and it says, Catholic-inspired organizations have gained significant credibility through their contributions to social well-being. They are both geographically widespread and thematically diverse, with an inspiration drawn from the gospel and the social teaching of the church. And how translate the social teaching of the church and the gospel into an action you can think of that these NGOs do? I mean, is it being out there to help the victims of an explosion in Beirut? What?
It's essentially the practical needs of the gospel of the day, in the sense that if it's the explosion in Beirut, if it's the COVID crisis and Ebola outbreak, working with the poor in the Bronx, be it in the favelas of Rio, you know, Catholic organizations have been in the trenches now for millennia, and
yeah.
and there is a real richness that we bring as Catholic organizations to these conversations at the United Nations that really, viewed objectively, cannot be discarded. And really, what it boils down to, in one sense it's theological, in one sense it's a Catholic social teaching, but it's really rendering a reality more human. It's bringing humanity to a situation of loss, of destruction, and Catholic healthcare, Catholic education. We've seen this countless times throughout history. So it's really enabling and rendering that more effective in its different expressions.
You know, I remember at one of the, it was either Cairo or Beijing, Navarro Valls was holding a press conference. He was the most followed spokesman for any delegation throughout these usually three week meetings. And actually, the Holy See was the only country, if you will, city state, that had daily briefings. The UN had its own, but we were the only institution that had its briefings. And by the way, we should tell our listeners that the Holy See has a permanent observer status at the UN, is not a full member. But I remember at one of the press conferences, a young gal journalist got up, waving her hand almost in an accusatory method. She said to Navarro Valls, "Exactly what right do you have to be here, and what right to be at the UN?" And in his calm, urbane, witty, wonderful diplomatic manner, Navarro Valls said, "Well, if you actually look back at the history of diplomatic relations, the Holy See, it has the oldest. We date from the 4th century. So we have the oldest history of an institution, oldest and unbroken history of the institution, you know, sending emissaries throughout the world. So now, Geoffrey, what is your specific function? Is there a typical day for you?
What's so beautiful about it is that it's so varied. Every day, multiple times during the day, there'll be a change in language, a change in working with the group from, let's say, Brazil, from Spain, from the United States, from parts of Africa and Asia. It's wonderfully rich and diverse, and I feel so blessed in that regard. Right now, we have started our new two-year program of activities where essentially we have thematic group meetings, now virtually, of course, where we consider, in fact, the impact and the effects of the pandemic. So we're having a series of virtual meetings on human rights, development, education, family, youth, health.
And these are all topics that can be explored on the website, which is foruminternational.org.
And so we, for example, yesterday, in fact, we just had a tremendous meeting on migration. We had 20 experts from throughout the world meet virtually and discuss for an hour the impact and effects of the pandemic as they see it on the ground in terms of their expert work with migration. And so we're very busy with that. And then in December, we will take the results of these initial meetings and then bring them together with representatives from the Vatican Dicasteries and Secretary of State and have a roundtable with the facilitators of these thematic groups, representatives of the Vatican Dicasteries, and look at how all the various topics are interconnected. So how the family issues relate to the migrant issues, with the education issues, with the health issues, and really weave some lines of connection there that then help the organizations, once we bring it together and present it to them, think of how they can achieve active synergies and collaborations that are multidisciplinary, multifaceted, and thus more effective. So it's an intense time, but a rich time, and really I'm just very grateful.
Well, and I want to praise you publicly right now because Geoffrey is a wonderful linguist. He spent a couple of years, I'm guessing, I never asked you the time, studying Arabic. Of course, to me, the written Arabic looks like a drawing. We don't recognize the, alphabet that we use. But so if you really want to get out there and be in touch personally via the language, you yourself with so many people, how many languages can you speak and communicate in?
Well, John, I tell you, sometimes I feel like I'm still learning English, but let's see. So it'd be English, Spanish, Portuguese, French, Italian, and then Arabic, and then, of course, we had to do some Latin as well because I'm a canon lawyer, actually, as well. But what you said is so true. You know, the languages are such a doorway, a window into new ways of thinking and new colors and new hues and new ways of considering ideas that, you know, in fact, in our last two-year cycle of work, we produced a document basically summing up that work and presented it to the Holy Father. And it was in English, and it was in French, of course, and then Spanish and Italian. But the French read in just a completely different hue, and it accented things that really brought out different ideas. And it was a translation, and it was a wonderful translation, but it was almost even more beautiful than the original. So in that sense, a language just adds so much. And I know you speak multiple languages as well, and you understand sort of the nuances that are entailed with that. But
well, probably I think our listeners can best link to you and I, who have to translate so many documents and things from the original. It's like there is no real word in English for simpatico, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. we can use in Spanish and in Italian. But thank God people do understand when you say, Geoffrey is a very simpatico person. They do understand that. But one time I was traveling and with some students many years ago, and I was on a French campus, and we had a health emergency, and I had to be there to translate from their English to the French doctors and nurses that were present. And I later told that story to my sister, who's a nurse. She said that must have been very difficult. She said what you can't understand if you've never done it is nurses and doctors have a shorthand. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's like that with other languages. There's this word, that word, an expression that says it all. You understand it, I understand it, and that's kind of all we need, But it can be a shorthand. Yeah. But the richness of the languages is just exceptional.
Yeah, and I love Brazil. I love Brazil. I love the culture. I love the people. And there's a word that is really very difficult to bring into any other language. It's called saudade. It means basically, it would be I miss you, but you use it almost as a noun. So it's like eu tenho saudades de você. So I have longings for you. It's so profound. So when they say, I miss you, it's almost like saying, I have longings for you. And so today I'm just thinking, I have saudades for John Paul II on this great feast day. Just thinking and praying of him so much and praying that he's with us in our work.
Oh, I ask him every day, and you can see the beautiful picture I have on my desk there and pictures of the two of us in the entrance to my home. You know, it's almost like the Italian... Ti voglio bene. Yes. The American for that would probably be love you, you know, and not a formal expression, but just that one of friendship. Let's talk for a second about COVID, because we, you know, before we started this interview, we were talking about that. And I guess we all of us have to thank the Lord for having inspired so many people to create things like FaceTime and Zoom, etc. So is that what you use in these meetings you've mentioned?
It is, you know, so it's tremendous. It's what a grace and gift and blessing that, you know, we have Zoom, we have these different types of virtual meeting capabilities, because it's allowed people to overcome in a certain sense that loneliness, that isolation.
Right.
And what we've seen in these first round of, let's say, thematic group meetings we've had for our forum activities, the first half of the meeting is spent just connecting. And when the people in the meeting, they realize that, you know what? Someone in Africa, in Mexico, in Australia, they're feeling the same things. They're struggling with the same things, asking the same questions both professionally and personally. There's a tremendous amount of solidarity and recognition of common sort of not only mission, but just, you know, struggle. And that's so wonderful.
Well, it has to be reaffirming then.
Yes.
Right. You in Rome and people on five other continents all feeling the same way, no matter what language they're using to express it. But it has to be. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one.
Exactly. That's so well said, John. I'm not alone. And that is so powerful right now when they're really just... This sense of isolation and in desperation that many people are feeling. So, you know, they're going through the steps of sort of grappling with this, what it means for their organizational missions. How do we translate our mission to educate or to work with migrants into this reality that we face now? There's a lot of grappling going on, but what's beautiful is that, let's say, so we have a meeting for an hour, 30, 40 minutes are spent sort of grappling with the challenges. But then the light goes on, and you know what? Hey, let's move now toward the solutions. You've said this, I've said this. You know, now we can identify where our common pathways forward are. And so that really, in a certain sense, is the beauty of what we try to offer, is that round table to say, okay, this is the problem, but we're not going to be limited there. We're going to move forward with creativity and energy and look for a collaborative solution.
And then, of course, you can follow up on these, you know, virtual meetings with emails. Somebody writes down the proposal they have just, you know, talked about in a virtual meeting. So now I want to know, have you ever had to travel? Obviously, the pre-COVID time, did you travel for your work?
Yes, you know, I've had to go to New York a few times and give presentations. I had to go to Strasbourg, in fact, and give a presentation at the Holy See Mission there in French, and do question and answer on the previous working program, which was on an inclusive society. What does an inclusive society look like from a perspective of Catholic social teaching, which indeed was fascinating, and engaging the cultural issues in that sense. So, you know, pre-COVID, there was quite a bit of travel. And look, I'm hoping as soon as we can to get back out there.
Well, that makes about 7 million of us, I think. That. And I'm speaking just of Italy. When we, you know, we're not going towards a new lockdown, but things have kind of gone downhill in the fall a bit. But we just have to ask John Paul and everybody he knows and loves in heaven to help take care of us. But have you ever met the Pope, Pope Francis, in your work?
Indeed. So every 2 years we have basically a general assembly where all the 120 or 30 organizations from around the world send a representative to Rome. We have 2 days of workshops, gatherings, brainstorming, and it concludes with mass with His Eminence Cardinal Parolin and then a private audience with the Pope. So I guess in 2017, we sat down with the Pope, just the forum committee members, for about 30 or 40 minutes.
And
wow. It was beautiful. And he basically explained his view of the nature of our work and how he saw it going forward. And I'll never forget, he said, you know, look, Evangelii Gaudium, that's the cornerstone of my pontificate. Look at it, go forward with it, and take it and do the best you can with it. And we got to pray the Our Father with him. Just a beautiful moment. So last, I guess, December 2019, we then met him again, and he gave us an audience and really, let's say in American football terms, gave us a playbook of our next 2 years going forward. You know, work as a team. You know, look the formation, but, you know, enrich yourselves by really diving deep into Catholic social teaching and the richness of it, and then, you know, you'll be better equipped to and prepared to give it to those who you minister to.
Well, talk about being reaffirmed, not only in the virtual meetings, talking with your friends and colleagues, the NGOs around the world, but with the Holy Father himself just sitting there. And I certainly would go back to work with the New Zeal, but that's something you always have every time we've met. And we maybe talk about your work and mine, but usually yours, it's so interesting. But you're always enthusiastic. You're always up. And I know that you transmit that to the NGOs that you deal with, and certainly your staff. And I'm sure the Holy Father felt it. So I know you have other commitments. I want to thank you for your time today. And big news day here in the Vatican, in addition to being a big feast day of our man, of our Saint John Paul. So, Geoffrey, thank you for your time. God bless you in your work. And we'll meet again for brunch at Home Baked.
Thank you so much, John. It's always a pleasure to see you.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.